Hey guys, this right here is going to be health assessment of the eyes. So this is going to be everything eyes. Again, with the AI hosts, just be mindful of the weird one-off words that they like to say, like factor XA is factor XA, or CN this the cranial nerves as CNI or CNII or CNXI or whatever. Just be mindful of that. This isn't perfect. And again, you might hear the hashtag tag tag thing. Nevertheless, the material is spot on and it's banging. So I hope you enjoy health assessment of the eyes.
Patient's here.
Oh boy, got some blood going.
Yeah, this is with blood.
Well, he's wearing it too.
Welcome to the bay. When you get over to the bed, we'll go ahead and give you the story. This is all going to happen super fast. Welcome to the emergency room.
70-year-old female, single driver of a vehicle. Appears that she went off-road into a ditch, rolled over her car onto a trailer, caved in. The top of the vehicle was caved in, so she was hanging out partially from the window.
There was 45 minutes of CPR, no return of circulation. We can stop CPR. 603.
The eye. It's often called the window to the soul, but honestly, in clinical practice, it's really the window to the entire nervous system, the circulatory system. It's just this biological marvel of engineering.
It truly is. And today, we're setting out on a deep dive. We want this to be more than just ticking boxes on assessment. The goal is like a long-term clinical reference for you.
Right. To really internalize the structure, get the function down cold, and crucially, spot the pathology almost instantly, moving towards real mastery.
Exactly. And our sources give us this great roadmap. They integrate the core anatomy, the testing techniques, and those really important clinical reasoning pearls.
Especially around interpreting what patients tell you, those subjective clues, and also what systemic diseases actually look like inside the eye.
Yeah, what shows up on the retina. So let's unpack it all, starting with the absolute foundation, the structures and the cranial nerves running the show.
Okay, foundation first, structure.
Well, to master the assessment, you've got to know the equipment, right? So externally, there's the obvious protective layer eyelids, the canthi, lashes.
Standard stuff.
Pretty standard. But critically important is the lacrimal apparatus. Remember those glands and ducts up in the upper outer corner of the orbit?
Yeah, the tear producers. Lubrication central.
Solely designed for that. Tears and lubrication. Then you move inside.
Okay, internal. This is where sight actually happens.
Right. You've got the tough white sclera, then the clear window at the front, the cornea.
Letting the light in.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Behind that, the iris, which is the colored part, controlling the size of the pupil.
And the pupil's just the opening, yeah.
Just the opening. Letting light hit the lens, which focuses it, and all that focus light lands way back on the retina.
That's where the image gets processed before heading up the optic nerve.
And that processing, that aiming, it needs incredible coordination. That's where the mobility team comes, and the extraocular muscles, the EOM.
Six muscles per eye, right?
Six per eye. Four rectus superior, inferior, lateral, medial, and two oblique superior, inferior. This whole setup is what gives us binocular vision.
Making sure the images from both eyes are parallel, integrated, not seeing double.
Precisely. And what's kind of amazing is how the brain manages all this movement with just three cranial nerves, CNLE3, 4, and 6.
It's super efficient, but I guess that complexity means when something goes wrong.
You often know exactly which nerve is the problem. CNR, the oculomotor, handles four of the six EOMs and lifts the eyelid. Think poesis, the drooping lid.
Okay, so CNN3 is the powerhouse.
Definitely. That CNNAB, the trochlear, just handles the superior oblique muscle.
Smaller job.
Uh-huh. And CNVM, the abducens, controls the lateral rectus, the one that moves the eye outwards.
Got it.
And the sources really stress this clinical pearl. If you see specific muscle weakness during that cardinal fields of gaze test, it points directly to a specific CN deficit. That's called paralytic strabismus.
So you're not just seeing an eye muscle issue, you're potentially diagnosing a neurological injury.
Exactly. A really powerful connection. So moving along that neurological pathway, how does the light actually get processed?
Okay. Pathway. Light hits the retina, travels up CN2, the optic nerve.
Right.
And then, this is important, it crosses at the optic chiasm before going deeper into the brain.
Hmm.
But we use this pathway for more than just seeing, right? We use it for reflexes.
Absolutely. The pupillary trio, this is fundamental assessment stuff. First, the light reflex.
Okay.
CN2, the optic nerve, is the sensor. It sees the light. But CN3, oculomotor, is the motor. It makes the pupil constrict.
So you shine the light.
And you get two reactions. The direct light reflex, the pupil, constricts in the eye you're shining the light into.
Makes sense.
And simultaneously, the consensual or indirect reflex, the other pupil constricts too.
Okay. So if one of those is missing, it helps you locate the nerve problem.
Immediately, yeah. So that covers static nerve function. Now let's bring in movement with accommodation.
This is focusing, right? Yeah. Shifting from looking far away to looking close up.
Exactly. And to do that, two things have to happen. The pupils constrict and the eyes converge.
Converge meaning move inward towards the nose.
Correct. So it's this dynamic three-part check.
Mm-hmm.
Visual acuity, light reflex, accommodation. That really sets the stage for everything else.
Okay. So once you've done those objective checks, the next crucial step is really listening. The subjective history.
Arguably the most crucial part for clinical reasoning. Because the timing and the nature of any visual change, those are your key diagnostic clues.
And the sources really emphasize distinguishing between sudden acute changes and gradual ones.
Huge difference. If a patient reports a sudden visual change, you've got to think acute. That needs an urgent referral.
What kind of things cause that?
Often head trauma, maybe hemorrhage, or acutely increased intracranial pressure, ICP. Serious stuff.
Okay. And the gradual changes?
Those usually relate more to known chronic issues. Simple aging, maybe systemic problems like poorly controlled diabetes or hypertension, or even some slow progressing neurological disorders.
So the management approach is totally different. Chronic decline versus acute emergency.
Totally different. Now, let's dig into some specific symptoms they might report. Lots of people mention spots or floaters.
Yeah, I hear that a lot.
The source material says it's pretty common, especially if you're nearsighted, myopic, or over 40. Usually just normal changes in the vitreous humor.
But there's a catch, right?
Oh, yeah. A critical distinction. Normal floaters are, you know, a few here and there, occasional. But if the patient reports a sudden shower of floaters, maybe with flashes of light.
Okay, that sounds bad.
That's a massive red flag. It could mean the retina is tearing or detaching. That's an emergency. Immediate referral. You have to ask about those flashing lights.
Good point. What about blind spots, scotomas?
Another potential red flag. A blind spot, scotoma, that's surrounded by normal vision. If it's intermittent, maybe vascular spasms or pressure on the optic nerve.
And if it's constant?
If it's a constant blind spot, especially they describe it like a curtain coming down.
Hmm.
Highly indicative of retinal detachment. Again, urgent.
Okay. And that classic symptom, seeing halos around lights.
Textbook sign of narrow angle glaucoma.
Mm-hmm.
If they have that plus severe eye pain and nausea, you're looking at an acute angle closure emergency. Straight to the ER.
Wow. Okay. Pain itself. What kind of descriptions matter?
The source gives good guidance here. Throbbing, stabbing, a deep ache that suggests something physical. Foreign object, maybe. Acute pressure change.
So the rule is?
Pretty simple. Any consistent or severe eye pain needs immediate same-day referral. Don't wait.
Got it. And excessive tearing.
Apophora.
Pay attention to whether it's one eye or both. Bilateral. Probably environmental irritants, allergies, maybe a blockage in both lacrimal systems.
And unilateral.
If it's just one eye, you really need to look closely for a foreign body or some kind of localized obstruction on that side. See how these subjective clues point you towards what to look for next.
Yeah, it directs your objective exam.
Yeah.
So let's move to that. Start with visual acuity.
Mm-hmm.
Checking CN2 ocular function.
Right. First up, the Snellen chart for distant vision. Everyone's seen it. Explain the 20/20 notation again for mastery.
Sure. 20/20 means you can read at 20 feet what a person with normal vision reads at 20 feet. If you're 20/40,
you have to be closer at 20 feet.
To read what someone with normal vision sees clearly at 40 feet. Exactly. So an abnormal finding here is myopia or nearsightedness where that second number is bigger.
And legal blindness?
That's defined as 20/200 or worse in the better eye, even with correction. That requires immediate functional assessment and probably referrals.
Okay. And for near vision, especially for older clients.
Over 40, or anyone struggling with reading, you use the Jaeger card. Hold it about 14 inches away.
And if they have to push it further away to see it clearly?
That's the classic sign of presbyopia.
Which is?
Impaired near vision. super common in people over 45. It's because the lens loses its elasticity, its ability to accommodate or focus up close as we age.
Ah, the reading glasses phenomenon.
That's exactly it. Okay, next, back to those EOMs. Testing CN3 third foreign line Wischl's with alignment checks. First, the corneal light reflex. Hirschberg test.
Checking for parallel alignment.
Yep. Shine a light from about 12 inches away, straight at their nose bridge. Normally, the reflection, the little pinpoint of light, should be in the same spot in both pupils, slightly medial to the center, usually.
And if they're in different spots?
That means misalignment is present, visible misalignment, which we call strabismus.
Which leads us right into the cover test. This one catches the more subtle issues.
Exactly. It's designed to detect slight deviations. And here, we need to lock down the difference between aphoria and atropia.
Okay, break that down.
Aphoria is like a mild weakness, a tendency for the eye to drift, but it only shows up when you break their binocular vision, like when you cover one eye. The brain usually compensates.
So it's hidden alignment weakness.
Sort of, often managed with glasses or prisms. A strabismus or tropia, though, that's a constant visible misalignment. Think esotropia, eye turned in, or exotropia, eye turned out.
That's more obvious and probably needs more intervention.
Generally, yes. Understanding that difference, phoria versus tropia, dictates the whole management plan.
Okay. And the last big EOM test, cardinal fields of gaze, checking the full range of motion.
Right. You have him follow your finger through the six cardinal positions. We're looking for smooth, symmetric, parallel tracking. No jerking.
What are the key abnormal findings here that signal neurological trouble?
Number one is nystagmus, that oscillating, shaking movement of the eye.
Is that always bad?
Well, a little bit of fine nystagmus at the very extreme lateral gaze can sometimes be normal. But sustained nystagmus, or jerky nystagmus, always abnormal, points to neurological issues, maybe inner ear problems.
Okay. What else?
Look for lid lag. That's when you can see that white rim of sclera above the iris as the eye moves downward. It's highly suggestive of hypothyroidism, like Graves' disease.
Interesting. Okay, let's quickly hit the need-to-know abnormalities from the external and internal inspection. Lids first. Ptosis, drooping.
Yeah, that drooping upper lid needs attention. Could be damage to CN the third, like we said, or it could be a sign of systemic muscle weakness, something like myasthenia gravis.
And in older adults, differentiate entropion.
Where the eyelid rolls inward, so the lashes rub against the cornea. That's a risk for abrasion. Very uncomfortable.
Premectropion.
Where the lid turns outward. That leads to dry eyes, poor tear drainage. Entropion. The inward turning one is generally the bigger mechanical risk to the cornea itself.
Makes sense. What about the color of the sclera, the white part?
Okay, a bright red spot is usually just a subconjunctival hemorrhage, broken blood vessel, looks traumatic, usually benign, resolves on its own.
Bit yellowing.
Yellowing scleral jaundice or icterus, that's systemic. Point straight to liver problems, high bilirubin. Not an eye problem per se, but visible in the eye.
Critical finding. Okay, pupils, especially in trauma or neuro settings, unequal size.
Anisocoria. Unequal pupils. Now, up to 20% of people have a slight normal difference, less than half a millimeter. But anything larger is abnormal. We really focus on the extremes, though.
Like meiosis.
Pinpoint pupils. Constricted, fixed. Think opiate narcotics, severe brain damage, like a pontine hemorrhage, or even some types of glaucoma drops.
And the opposite, mydriasis.
Dilated and fixed pupils. This is often an urgent, really bad sign. Could be CNS injury, circulatory collapse, deep anesthesia. Maybe certain poisonings like anticholinergics.
Wow. So just knowing the difference between meiosis and mydriasis based on size and reaction to light is potentially life-saving assessment.
Absolutely critical skill. Okay, so now we have the tools. Let's use the source material to really focus on the long-term study stuff. Common disorders and risk reduction, starting with cataracts.
Right, cataracts, clouding of the lens, leading cause of blindness, but often preventable, you said?
Often highly preventable, yes. Pathophysiologically, it's a slow clouding. Symptoms creep up. Poor night vision first. Sensitivity to glare. Maybe seeing halos. Colors seem faded or yellowed.
Frequent prescription changes too, right?
Yeah, that's another clue. But the risk factors are key for education beyond just getting older.
What else?
Uncontrolled diabetes is a big one. Excessive sun exposure without protection. Smoking. Long-term use of corticosteroid medications. Even obesity.
So the client education is pretty clear.
Very clear. Wear sunglasses, good UV protection. Stop smoking. Limit excessive alcohol. Maintain a healthy weight. Manage that diabetes. Maybe even ask about antioxidant supplements, though the evidence there varies.
Okay, next major one, glaucoma. This is a group of diseases, right? Damaging the optic nerve, often due to high eye pressure.
Correct. And you absolutely need to know the two main types and how they present clinically. First, open-angle glaucoma.
The common one.
Most common. Progresses slowly, often silently. Characterized by subtle, patchy blind spots, usually starting in the peripheral vision. Over time, it leads to that classic tunnel vision.
So the patient might not even notice until a lot of damage is done.
Exactly. Which is why screening is so vital. Contrast that with acute angle closure glaucoma.
This one sounds dramatic.
It is dramatic. It's an emergency. Symptoms are sudden and severe.
Yeah.
Extreme headache, intense eye pain, nausea, vomiting, and those distinctive halos around lights.
Needs immediate treatment to lower the pressure.
Immediately. Or permanent blindness can result quickly. Risk factors are similar. High eye pressure, family history, age. But remember, screening needs to start earlier for African Americans, around age 40 compared to 60 plus for the general population.
And screening frequency depends on age and risk profile.
Absolutely. Could be every 6, 12 months for high risk or older individuals.
Okay, final big disorder. Age-related macular degeneration, AMD. Leading cause of vision loss over 60 in Americans hitting central vision.
Right. AMD is the deterioration of the macula, that tiny spot in the retina responsible for sharp, detailed central vision. So symptoms are blurred or distorted central vision, maybe blind spots right in the middle of what you're looking at.
And there's a screening tool for this one.
Yeah, the Amsler chart. It's basically a grid. Patients look at it regularly at home, checking if any lines appear wavy, distorted, or if any parts of the grid are missing.
And risk factors. Besides age.
The strongest preventable risk factor, hands down, is smoking. Huge link. Also obesity, light eye color maybe, a diet high in saturated fat and low in antioxidants.
Smoking again. Okay, let's bring this whole thing full circle. Back to the retina. This is where we see the systemic diseases manifest, right? Hypertension, diabetes.
This is where it all comes together visually. You look inside with the ophthalmoscope and you can see the damage. You look for exudates and hemorrhages.
Okay, like what?
In both high blood pressure and diabetes, you might see cotton wool patches. Soft exudates. They look fluffy, irregular white patches. Caused by tiny infarcts in the retinal arterioles, a sign of vascular stress.
Ow. What else?
You might see hard exudates. These are different, solid-looking, well-defined, creamy yellow spots, often near the macula, also seen in diabetes and hypertension.
And hemorrhages, bleeding.
Yep. Superficial hemorrhages look like flame-shaped streaks, often associated with acute, severe hypertension or papilledema, that swelling of the optic nerve head due to increased ICP.
Okay, and deep hemorrhages.
Those look more like dots or blots, irregular shapes, most commonly linked to diabetic retinopathy.
And the tiniest sign?
The microaneurysms. Tiny little red dots. Often, the very earliest vascular sign you can see of diabetic retinopathy developing.
So finding any of these isn't just an eye finding.
Not at all. It connects directly back to the patient's overall health. It tells you about their blood pressure control, their glucose control. You're assessing their systemic disease management right there on the retina.
That truly is the definition of clinical mastery, isn't it? Synthesizing structure, function, the subjective report, objective tests, the pathology. Realizing the eye exam is really a systemic health assessment.
Absolutely. The structures, the functions we went over, they are the absolute bedrock of your clinical judgment. We didn't even get into specific treatments today, but just knowing the difference between those pinpoint meiosis pupils,
which could be narcotics, brain damage,
and those wide open dilated mydriasis pupils,
signaling CNS injury, maybe circulatory collapse.
Just by shining a light, that shows the immediate diagnostic power you have with these skills.
That level of detailed assessment lets you intervene immediately. It's the difference between just asking, oh, what's wrong with your eye, and recognizing, uh-oh, this looks like acute angle closure glaucoma, or I think there might be a globe perforation here.
Exactly. This patient needs an urgent referral, like now. Mastering the eye assessment is about mastering that immediate, potentially life-saving triage. That's the real payoff for this kind of long-term detailed learning.
A really powerful way to frame it. Thank you for diving deep with us today on this.
My pleasure.
Until next time.